Next, we'll have a section on copyright. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Brooks.
As you've no doubt seen, copyright is an important part of the plan. Copyright can either facilitate access and preservation or stand in its way, and there's a lot of the latter that has gone on historically. I would say that over the last year, year and a half, overall, there hasn't been much movement on copyright until very recently, when there have been several things that have happened that could be very good. So I want to tell you about those. But first, the starting point is really December of 2011, when the Copyright Office, U.S. Copyright Office, released its report on pre-1972 recordings. They had held hearings before. We were very involved in those, gave them position papers, testified, and so forth. The recording industry, led by the RIAA and some others, were very opposed to this. In the end, they weren't terribly persuasive, however, and the Copyright Office came out with a basic endorsement of what we were advocating, we and several others in the preservation and archival community. That is, that pre-1972 recordings should be brought under federal law, thus establishing for the first time a public domain for the oldest recordings in the United States. And various other protections, too. There are steps beyond that that have to be taken, but nothing matters until first you're covered by a unitary law system. So the Copyright Office went on record for that. And during 2012, not a lot happened. 2012, you may recall, was an election year. The gears tend to freeze up in Congress. But in 2013, this year, some interesting things have started to happen. First of all, in February of this year, the Library of Congress, as you've just heard, released its long-awaited National Recording Preservation Plan. 12 years in the making, and important to remember, requested by Congress. This is Congress asking the library to make a recommendation, in some ways along the lines of the film preservation program of earlier years that has proven successful, but do it for audio recordings. You'll hear a lot about this plan. It includes recommendations on copyright, which are very much in conformance with those recommended by the Copyright Office and by us. That is, pre-72 recordings should be brought under federal law. Action should be taken on orphan works, and preservation exceptions under Section 108 need to be addressed and updated for the digital era. So you've got two very strong expert opinions from the government's own experts in these areas telling Congress what they think needs to be done. In March of 2013, just a couple of months ago, the Register of Copyright, Maria Palente, testified before the House Intellectual Property Subcommittee that the time had come for a major overhaul of copyright law, which she dubbed the next great Copyright Act. Ms. Palente, as you may recall, had just taken over the Copyright Office at the time that the pre-1972 hearings were being held in 2011, at which we appeared. She's from the nonprofit sector. She's a copyright attorney who had represented art museums, I believe, and understands some of the challenges that nonprofits and cultural institutions face under copyright law. And she has to balance the interests, of course, of copyright holders and congressmen. And she is doing a wonderful balancing act in that regard. But I think that fundamentally she understands and approves our policies. And certainly under her watch, the Copyright Office issued that report, which was very favorable to what we want to get done. So that was in March. Shortly after that, in early April, Congressman Bob Goodlatte, how many know who Bob Goodlatte is, by the way? A few. Okay. You will hear more. He is the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. That is a very powerful position in Congress. And the House Judiciary Committee is where copyright legislation starts. If they don't initiate it, there's not going to be any. The Senate has to approve, and the rest of the House has to approve, but it starts there. It has a subcommittee on intellectual property. The Judiciary Committee has 40 members. Almost all of them are on the subcommittee, so it's kind of a committee of the whole, almost. And he is committed to copyright reform. He has said that he will hold a series of hearings to get this started, and he said, held the first one a few days ago, as a matter of fact. I think most people believe that he and Ms. Pallente are coordinating their efforts. They work closely together, obviously. It's doubtful that she would have taken a stand as she did unless he knew about it, and his tends to back hers. Again, he's not committing himself to what he wants to do. They all have politics to take into account. But clearly there's motion here. And there are a number of reasons for that motion and that sudden interest in doing something about copyright, which may be positioned as technical adjustments, because the more you say we want an overhaul, the more flags go up all over the place and people feel threatened and battles begin. The more you say, well, we're just going to technically adjust some areas, the more you have a chance of getting things done. So this may be, you know, technical adjustments for the digital era. It's been a long time since the acts of the 1990s. But one other thing happened, and that was in late April, just a few weeks ago, a New York appellate court ruled that a federal copyright law, including the safe harbor provisions of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, did not apply, explicitly did not apply to pre-1972 sound recordings. And in fact, it joined a chorus of recent court decisions which explicitly asked Congress to do something about this murky confusion in copyright law. In fact, the New York court, which was deciding an internet case, the Groove Shark versus Universal case, said that, quote, it would be far more appropriate for Congress, if necessary, to amend the Digital Millennium Copyright Act to clarify its intent for the courts to do so by fiat. And there are other court decisions that are calling on Congress, hey guys, you know, clear this up for us, because we're having problems here in the court system. That is another thing that tends to push Congress to do something. It also creates a threat to some very big players out there, notably sites like YouTube and its owner Google, which under the DMCA, which is federal, if somebody uploads an infringing act, infringing piece of material, a recording or something like that, as long as they take it down, if they take it down promptly when they're given notice to do so, then they're safe from prosecution. If nobody tells them to take it down, they can leave it up until somebody tells them to take it down. That's the safe harbor. If that doesn't apply, if nobody has to tell them anything, they just get a lawsuit in the mail, they could be deluged with lawsuits. You know how much is on YouTube. Practically all the music of the 20th century is on YouTube by somebody. And they don't want to suddenly be open to state lawsuits coming from every direction from people who never even told them about it and never gave them any notice, just you know, sue first and ask questions later. Google has a lot of lawyers. They have a lot of clout. Google and Wikipedia and some other major players, you might remember last year, were responsible for stopping two big copyright expansion acts in their tracks, the SOPA and the PIPA acts that were rocketing through Congress until the Google and others raised the flag and incited a rebellion, basically, on the internet. Congress got tens of thousands of input, and suddenly they said, wait a minute, this quiet thing we're doing behind the scenes isn't gonna fly. So they have clout, and that means that we have allies, maybe for different reasons, but potentially we have allies. So these things all are in the last 3 months. No doubt, as we move forward, we're going to be watching this situation closely to see where our opportunities are. One thing we would ask of you, the members of ARSC, is to be ready to contact your congressman if something is about to come up for a vote or something is about to move. Things can go slowly in Congress and then suddenly move very, very quickly. The copyright interests are very much on top of this, and they can move with lightning speed to get their language in where they want to. And we have to be ready to move faster than academic organizations traditionally do. Particularly if your congressman happens to be, and I know this is anti-democratic and it makes no sense at all, but it's the way our system works. If your congressman happens to be one of the 40 members of the House Judiciary Committee, if your congressman happens to be Bob Goodlatte, who is the representative from the Staunton, Lynchburg, Roanoke area of Virginia, you have a lot more influence, unfortunately, than the rest of us poor people out there who live somewhere else. When congressmen hear from their own constituents in their own district, they tend to listen. If they hear from two or three of them, all of whom have friends and have family and, you know, can talk them up in the local meetings and things, they don't want that. Hearing from local constituents can make a difference at key points, particularly if those congressmen are in key positions for this. We're going to try to get our membership database in order in ARSC so that we can let you know when situations like that occur, particularly when there's an opportunity for your own congressman to perhaps be a key mover in these things. But please, you know, think about that. Nobody's telling you you have to, but you can help, and we will do everything we can to let you know when those times are. And as always, you can go to www.recordingcopyright.org, I'll repeat that in a minute, which is the website of our Coalition for Copyright Reform with the MLA and the Popular Culture Association and Society for American Music. We have several organizations together in that, where you can sign a petition or express your opinions. It's recordingcopyright.org. And that's a place also to let your opinions be known. This is a sheet which you can get off the internet that just lists the members of the House Judiciary Committee with their nice smiling pictures and where they represent. If your representative is on there, you're in a good position to help with this. And that's basically where we are on copyright right now. We'll stay on top of it and hope that we can count on your help. Thank you.
Are there questions for Tim on copyright? I want to pose one.
Sure.
Maybe not to you. So how many here think they would be willing to write a letter to their congressman on behalf of this? Pretty good. How many of you will?
That's very encouraging. That's very encouraging. That's by far the majority of the room. And other people were looking down at their Blackberries, but so thank you. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Why don't you pick whoever's going to get them a microphone?
In past instances, there has been a sample letter provided. Can the ARSC board or somebody draft a sample letter that we can just send to the congressman and edit as necessary?
Yes, we will do that. We will send you a letter. You can modify it to your own language if you want to, or you can just sign it. But yes, we will provide you with a sample of, and it's short, basically, but we will provide you with something.
Does letter mean paper, snail mail, or can it be one of those things where there's a website where you just sort of click on it and it sends it with your name? Because I've done those a lot more often than I've done anything more detailed.
Yeah, there are several levels of ways that you can, did you want to address that, Sam?
Sam.
I know from Congress and talking to aides, it's much more effective to send them a letter or a fax. And this goes for also the form letter. It's great to have a form letter, but adapt it a little bit to your own interests. Add 108 if you're interested in 108 or Orphan Works. They don't want to it's too easy for us to just push a button, so they tend to be dismissive. But if they get a letter and they all look a little different and still use whatever is provided as a template, I'm not saying you have to spend hours writing it. I've found, and I'm told, it's much, much more effective. It has more impact on them as a true grassroots thing as opposed to just making it easy.
And add how it will impact your institution, too. What are you doing now that you could be doing better, or what won't you be able to do if they do certain things?
Yes.
And I agree that we should be writing more personalized letters, but I'm thinking I might have friends and family that might not be willing to do that, but I might be able to get them to click that button. So if we could have both, that might be even better.
And one thing to always include in this is I'm in your district, or I am one of your constituents. Boy, does that attract their attention. And there are several levels. As Sam says, a letter is usually more effective than an email, although it is slower. It takes time to get through. The most effective, if you can do it, is to go either to the congressman's office or to their local office in person and say, look, there's an act there that he's going to vote on, and this is going to hurt us, or this is something he's got to think about. They really, when they sit down with you, when they see people come in the door, they really pay attention. I realize that's difficult to do for many people, but any one of those will help. Letter is great, and we will give you a template for that.
I've heard the opinion expressed that we need to be careful for what we wish for in terms of opening the door to copyright reform, in that once the gate is open, that the entrenched interests that wish for further copyright protection into the 200-year era will rush to the gates, and things like Section 108 and some of the benign neglect that we exist under as archivists now might actually be under attack by opening the door to copyright reform. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I'm glad you asked the question, because there are two sides to this. There is a split even within the library and archival community, which may seem surprising. And basically, there is a school of thought, and the ALA, which I assume some of you are a member of, takes this position, or at least some within the ALA, I do, that it's better not to open copyright at all. Horrible things will happen or might happen, so let's live in the situation we have, kind of under the radar. They probably won't sue us. They're not going to go after my institution, most likely. And so even though the law is against us and the fines could be towering, let's leave everything alone. That's kind of like in my opinion, like the Stockholm syndrome. You know, the chains are tight, but at least I know what they are. The photographers' union has been against this because they are afraid that there's a real campaign of fear that's been waged there, that it's going to make everybody use my photographs. Nobody's going to pay me anything for them. It's terrible. It's terrible. I'm not going to paid anything now, but I'm going to get paid less, if that's possible. If something changes, therefore, let's not change anything. There's a lot of resistance to change, no matter what it is. I mean, you go through American history. I mean, there's tremendous resistance to changing slavery, to changing civil rights, changing all kinds of things. And, you know, seemingly rational reasons to resist change just because it's so scary. We feel, and obviously a range of the government's own experts in this area feel, that if something is really badly constructed, particularly for today's era, and you're living in this uncertain world where you don't know what's going to happen, who's going to sue you, what you can do, it's better to change it and make it right than to just sort of stay in the shadows and hope something doesn't happen. That's one thing. The other part of it is that most of these laws that we have now that are so damaging to access and preservation were passed in the 90s or earlier, in an era where there wasn't a lot of light shined on this. And the phrase was, mention copyright, and people's eyes start to blur, you know. Nobody knew what it was. Things were passed in Congress with no hearings. Pre-72 exception was passed with no hearings, no studies, nothing. It was just done in the conference committee quietly, and nobody even knew about it. That kind of quiet, behind the scenes, fix things my way, is almost impossible to do today. Partially because of the internet, partially because of SOPA and PIPA, SmackDown, and the kind of revolt that has now come, partially because of what's happened in Europe, where, my lord, they've had a war over there over copyright. They tried to get it through the back door, and instead copyright maximalists suffered a major defeat in England. Then they went to Brussels, and they got kind of half a loaf out of the EU. That wouldn't have been true 10 years ago. So because we're much more organized, it's much more public, there's much more sunshine on this than there is, this is a much better period to get something done, in my opinion, than it was in years past. And if we don't take advantage of that, you know, shame on us, because once something gets locked in, it's going to stay locked in for a long time. As the past laws have. They're not going to come back to this every year for the next decade. So this, in my opinion, is a window of opportunity where there's a lot of focus on it. You've got people like Google and people with clout that are concerned about it. You've got the Copyright Office, and you've got the Library of Congress, and you've got other major, neutral, impartial players telling, and the courts telling Congress, come on, guys, get this right. That's not going to last indefinitely, so I think we need to take advantage of it now. But there are others who feel differently. There are others that feel, you know, it's too dangerous. It's too dangerous. So, you know, you can make up your own mind on that.
I'd like to follow up on that, because I know the ALA's position pretty well on this. You know, there is a lot of danger. Make no mistake, there are historical reasons for being afraid of the danger of opening up the Copyright Act. We have ample evidence in SOPA PIPA, in stuff that has actually become law, like Section 110, which was awful, or other aspects of recent copyright legislation. Congress is not good at writing laws on copyright these days. We want to open it up, we want to do it right. Doing it right, and this is where I have to back Tim up here, means you have to show up, because the recording industry will show up in force. So on the subject of showing up at the congressperson's door, it doesn't have to be that difficult. They have district offices in your district. It's close to you by definition because you're in the district. And those districts, even though if your representative isn't present, they have legislative assistants and legislative directors who can meet with you in proxy. And those people will communicate with your member of Congress. So I would encourage you, especially if you feel comfortable talking about the subject, to show up at their door and talk with them about it.
First, I want to say, if anyone doesn't know, that was Eric Harbison who just spoke. Did you know that? But Eric is the Music Library Association Tim Brooks on copyright, and is as effective as Tim in keeping up with the law and what's going on. And I think the partnership we have with MLA through Tim and Eric is extraordinary and very important. But I just want to introduce you and thank you, Eric. I also want to just make some comments about what I see in terms of copyright advocacy. There are some very powerful forces in copyright, as Tim said, and some of them are, they're paranoid too. I mean, there are a lot of IP holders that are getting screwed in different ways. But it's important to keep in mind they're not getting hurt by us. But they tend to think of anybody who's against anything they want to do, they sort of take extremist, I believe they use extremist techniques of painting any kind of adversary as dangerous. It's like the Red Scare as a commie. So I think that it's important that when we do advocate to our representatives, and the only reason I didn't raise my hand, Tim, or Gene didn't raise his hand, is we don't have a representative in Congress who votes, but have to add that. We'll get you on that after we conquer copyright. But But the point is that to remind them that you're not sitting on BitTorrent all day downloading HBO new movies and HBO shows illegally, and you're not ripping off, copying your CDs and giving them to all your friends. You are, ARSC is made up of record collectors and libraries that buy records. We buy more records probably as a group than anyone almost, MLA probably, and we need to remind them of that we're on the side of these IP holders in terms of the health of the record business, and we're not their enemies, but we're cast as their enemies very often. And I think it's important to remind Congress of that the laws that we're concerned about impede our work of preservation, impede preserving American heritage. And this isn't about getting things for free for libraries. Fair use is good for education. They need to be reminded of that. Fair use is not about getting things for free. We don't do a lot of sampling of music for our rap recordings, and if you do, I hope you'll contribute your profits to the Copyright Committee. But anyway, I just want to make that warning about being sure that we're not cast as we're not cast and marginalized as enemies to these people, which is a really common technique these days of them. Eric knows from the pre-72 hearings the kind of grief we got there.
Anyone else?
Just to follow up on what Sam and I and you were talking about yesterday, we need to emphasize that what we're talking about is not free use or public domain use. We're talking about rationalized use. To move these pre-72 recordings under federalized status does not mean that it makes their use free. It means that it makes their permissions rationalized and nationwide, and that what it would amount to is a change from a system that rewards those who are willing to assume risk to those who are willing to pay for certainty. There would be a nationwide system in which prices, availability, marketing are all nationwide because it's been brought under a single explicit legal system from the current system in which there are no nationwide rules, are no nationwide laws, in many cases are no laws at all, and is essentially boils down to a law of the jungle in which the rules are dictated by those who have the most money and the most power and are willing to exercise it.
That's Bruce Epperson, by the way, who's a member of the committee and whose column you may have read in the ARS Journal. Very knowledgeable on the subject. Anything else? Thank you very much.
I want to step out of the schedule here a moment to recognize two people. Has anybody noticed any changes in the ARSC website over the last year? So I want to thank Kim Peach, who's our web editor, and stand back up, Robin Pike, who's our webmaster. So throughout the day, if you're wondering the difference that one person can make, to see what these two ladies have been doing for just our website in contributing to that.